The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a great show for you today. In this half hour of the show, we'll be featuring a rebroadcast of an interview with Reina Simnagar, who published a book called Persian Cooking, Purim's in the Air. Purim happened, of course, in the country of Persia. There's still lots of Persian Jews running around the world, and they're doing lots of interesting cooking things, so we aim to please, to entertain and educate. We have lots of wonderful music. After the interview, we'll be playing a Benny Friedman song. Benny Friedman is right now, as we are speaking, in Oak Park. And there's a Hanukkah Sefer Torah, a dedication of a new Torah scroll at the Yeshivas Lubavitch on 10 Mile. So right after we get done with the show at 12 o'clock, you can go over there and participate in the festivities. And Benny's giving a free concert. And it's open to the public. So we have the portion of the week, which is the portion of Tetzaveh, which is chapter 28 in the book of Exodus and following, a dynamic Hasidic story. But before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Israeli Air Force planes attacked a weapons convoy along the Syrian-Lebanese border overnight. Israel declined to comment on the reports, of course, but earlier this week warned it might intervene if Syria seemed to be losing control of its chemical weapons. Earlier, Israel moved Iron Dome anti-missile batteries to Haifa to protect northern Israel. A demonstration outside an Israeli prison turned ugly as about 200 Palestinians began throwing rocks and bottles at IDF soldiers. The demonstrators were protesting the hunger strike of Samer Asawi, who was rearrested for violations of his terms of release. Asawi was one of 1,600 prisoners who was released last year in exchange for the release of captured soldier Gilad Shalit. A four-man Israeli security delegation was in Cairo to take part in talks about the peace process between Israel and Palestinian Authority. The talks will include discussions of the recent Israeli airstrike in Syria and the deteriorating security situation in the Sinai. Bulgarian security forces raided the temporary residence of a visiting Hamas delegation in Sofia and then expelled the officials from the country. Hamas quickly criticized Bulgaria for the move, charging the country with bowing to Israeli pressure, but the Bulgarian Foreign Ministry issued a statement saying that Bulgaria is part of the EU and the Hamas is on the European Union's list of terrorist organizations. Canada placed Israel and seven other countries on a list of safe countries whose citizens are unlikely to seek asylum as refugees. That means that if an Israeli comes to Canada and says, "I need asylum," they'll probably say no. The 35 nations now on the list include the United States and most members of the European Union. Israel's addition to the list excludes Gaza and the West Bank. Freshman's a cute story. Freshman member of Knesset Yitzhak Shmueli missed his planned first speech in the Knesset this week to fulfill his reserve duty. People, they do 4 years of service, 3 years of service in Israel, and then until they're 56, they get called up like every once in a while to go like do reserve duty. So he got called up. Shmueli wrote on his Facebook page, "When they call us to reserve duty, we don't ask questions." Shmueli organized the social justice and cost of living protests in the summer of 2011 and 12, which is how he got elected on the labor union ticket. Jewish-Israeli soccer star Itai Schechter, who plays professionally for Swansea in England, missed his club's week-long training camp because it's taking place in Dubai. The UAE, the United Arab Emirates, and Israel Emirates do not have diplomatic relations, and Schechter could have been arrested and deported if he tried to enter Dubai. Cambridge is following up a story we did, must be about a year and a half, 2 years ago. Cambridge and Oxford universities are collaborating to purchase part of the Kara Geniza that is up for auction by Wellesley University. The two schools need $1.8 million to prevent the 800-year-old collection from being auctioned off to private bidders. Found in an attic in Cairo more than 100 years ago, the collection contains thousands of fragments of Judaica, including letters and writings from the famed scholar Maimonides. And finally, the presence of an Israeli-made lighter has caused a scandal at the Beirut International Airport. The operator of a store there put the product on display in the duty-free area after removing all evidence that pointed to their Israeli origin, including the Hebrew script on the packaging. Lebanese law makes dealing with Israeli companies an offense punishable by imprisonment for 3 to 10 years. And that's the news. Do you know the best place to buy fruit and vegetables? Why, it's at Fruitasia. Located on Southfield Road, just south of the 13 Mile, Fruitasia provides quality, value, and the most wonderful environment to shop. You'll enjoy the spacious aisles, excellent selection, great prices, and friendly staff at Fruitasia on Southfield Road and 13 Mile. Why go anywhere else when you can go to One Stop Kosher? Located on Greenfield Road, just south of 696, you're never far from One Stop Kosher. At One Stop Kosher, you'll find the largest selection of Passover products in Michigan. One Stop Kosher carries thousands of kosher for Passover items, and over 100 Passover items are on sale now. They even have kosher for Passover pizza, hamburger buns, and cake. One Stop Kosher has the largest selection of kosher for Passover wines as well. It's One Stop Kosher on Greenfield Road in 696 for all your shopping needs. Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. How could you not go for a whole entire week without eating pizza? Of course, if you need it, if you got one of those Joneses for pizza in the middle of Pesach, One Stop Kosher is a place where you can get it. I am Herschel Finman. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. Speaking of food, we are speaking live online with Raina Simnagar, who is the author of Persian Food from the Non-Persian Bride. How are you today, Raina?
Doing great. Thank you.
Good to hear. I like doing cookbooks, and one of the reasons why I like doing cookbooks is because even before I pick them up, I know how it's going to end. So there's no, like, there's surprises. There are surprises. Every cookbook has. My wife is actually the cookbook aficionado, and she's the one who reviews cookbooks and says to me, Herschel, you got to get this person on the show. So you can thank Mrs. Finman for having you on. Tell us about, the title is intriguing. It's Persian Food from a Non-Persian Bride. So that would be like, I could write a book about Persian food if I didn't know about it, and then I could call it Persian Food from an Ashkenazi Rabbi. So tell us, please, Raina, tell us about yourself, please, before we get into the book.
Sure. It has to do, the book was born because I learned how to cook Persian food from my mother-in-law. I'm obviously not Persian, and I ended up marrying a very good Persian boy who only eats Persian food. This is his favorite food besides sushi. Only eats Persian food besides sushi. Isn't that hilarious that Jews need sushi?
Yeah, sushi.
What is it with that?
Yeah. I know. But you can do fusion. Listen, if they can do bagel and lox, or excuse me, cream cheese and lox sushi,
kebab,
I'm sure you could.
Kebab wrapped with rice and seaweed or something.
Yeah,
there you go.
Something with like a lot of cumin in it.
Exactly. So my mother-in-law was gracious enough to teach me how to cook. And if you have a mother-in-law, you know how difficult that must have been. We don't necessarily have a language in common, even though we do speak the same language. And it was difficult. It was difficult. There was no measurements. There was really, intriguing and weird things that they do with food that I was like, why do you have to do this? Is this step really necessary? So I brought it down to like a non mysterious Persian way because I had to have it that way. I'm being blessed with 5 children and I don't have time to spend the whole afternoon in the kitchen. So I had to really make it available for myself and available for my friends that were asking for recipes all the time. And that's how the book was born. And since it's a little bit unorthodox, if you want to put it that way, from the Persian point of view, I called it Persian Food from the Non-Persian Bride because I will ultimately always be the non-Persian bride.
Uh-huh. No matter how long you'll be making this for.
No matter how long, I have a Persian cookbook, I will always be an outsider.
Right. You know, look at you, your husband is involved with a mixed marriage like this, so. are you Sephardi in origin, your family?
So originally my family, I was born Jewish. I converted to Judaism.
Uh-huh.
And my family is Marano Jews, also known as Anusim.
Uh-huh.
So I am originally the original Sephardi.
You could say that going back
really
to Spain.
Mizrahi. He's Mizrahi. I'm really, the Sephardi one is me.
Okay, there you go. Have you been able to incorporate maybe some South American flavors into the Persian food and gotten it past your husband, or it's just got to be tradition?
No, you can't fool the guy. He was born in Shiraz, so you can't fool him. He's hardcore Persian. And that's really one of the reasons why this cookbook has recipes that really cannot compromise on the flavor, the authentic Persian flavor, because I had to feed a real person. So even though the recipes are huge in shortcuts and tips, they still have to really cater to the Persian palate.
You're reminding my I have an aunt who is referred to as Tanta Anna. Tanta is Yiddish and French and a bunch of other languages for aunt. Mm-hmm. She's my mother's sister. And at the Seder, she would say the same joke every single year, not having remembered that she said it the year before, which is okay because I would say the same jokes and she would laugh just as heartedly because she didn't remember me saying them the year before. But the joke goes is there's a man and he likes to have his pot roast just a certain way. And he tells his wife how his mother made it, and it was the best pot roast. And she makes the pot roast. She gets the recipe from the mother. And he says, it's very good, but it's not like my mother. Mm-hmm. And she does all kinds of things. It's very good, but it's not like my mother. One day, she goes away. She forgets about it. The bottom of the pan scorched. And he said, what could I do? You know, I've got to make supper. She puts it down on the table. He says, oh, it tastes just like my mother's.
There you go.
So so it's what we're used to, and I suppose it's a good thing. Now, when I'm thinking Persian food, I'm thinking there's a lot of ingredients which are indigenous to Persian, and the way my mother, who was an excellent cook and would be called gourmet, and the reason why she calls herself a gourmet cooking is because she understands the way peasants think when it comes to cooking. That's, and she said, like, French onion soup came about because French peasants had a lot of onions and a lot of hard bread. So they put the two together into a pot of boiling water, and voila, we have this thing called French onion soup. So, but there's a lot of ingredients which the Persians use because they're available in Persia. They're available in Iran, but they're not necessarily available. Well, I suppose you get everything in Brooklyn at this point. But like tamarind paste, for example, is available in Detroit because there's so many Arabs and Chaldeans that live here. But what if I'm living in, say, Omaha, Nebraska, and I've got a copy of Persian Food for the Persian Bride and I can't find tamarind paste, for example?
So nowadays with the internet, really the world has become, you know, so small. You can totally get all of these ingredients through the internet. Amazon.com, Sadaf.com, GoldChainProducts.com. All these are websites that carry exotic ingredients and, surprisingly, mostly kosher. And obviously, every single city in the United States has a Middle Eastern store. There's not, of course, unless you're talking about the boonies, like in a really the middle of nowhere, there won't be. But most major cities in the United States where Jews tend to congregate have a Middle Eastern store. And I have in my blog a video that I shoot on how to shop at a Middle Eastern store and what to look at and what things need a heksher and what things do not need a heksher, obviously guided by a Sephardic Orthodox rabbi. And that will help people also try to venture into this new world, because what happens when you come into a Middle Eastern store is like literally stepping into a Middle Eastern country. The salesperson is Middle Eastern, could be from Iran, it could be from Armenia, it could be from anywhere. And the foods are so exotic and so different, the colors, the smells. It's like literally going to another country. So it's very special, and it's very, you know, it's just a really great experience. And I wanted people to see how to shop at a Middle Eastern store so people can go and look at the video as well. So, yeah, you can totally learn, get the stuff on the internet very, very easily nowadays.
Oh, okay. We are becoming one world.
Yeah.
So, I want to talk about Passover. I'm going to save that for a little bit later. This book, I know, came out for Purim because there's a direct connection between the Persian Empire and between the story of Purim. But Jews in Iran and Persia are very big with keeping Passover, and there's lots of Passover traditions.
Yes.
So you talk about, I know, generally when it comes to like making foods like the way they did it in the old country, it seems like everybody's grandmother had time to devote a whole entire day to a meal that was going to take about 10 minutes to be consumed. And
exactly.
And there just seem to be things that are just so time-consuming. We live now. This is America. Everything's instantaneous, and we want it right now, and we don't want to do a whole lot about it. So let's take a – I'd like to talk about – you picked the most complicated recipe in this cookbook, which is entitled The Persian Food for the Non-Persian Bride by Raina Simnagar, who's talking to us on the phone. Something that takes a long time that you sort of like – cut down the time prep?
So definitely, if you ask any Persian person out there what's the most complicated Persian food that they can possibly make, they will tell you dolmeh. And dolmeh is, you know, it's complicated enough that you can actually buy it in a can.
But it never tastes as good as your grandmother's.
Yeah, but never. I mean, if you taste it, and I don't mean to blow my own horn, but if you taste my dolmeh, which is actually an exact copy of my husband's grandmother's dolmeh, so I can't really claim any ownership over it, it is the most incredibly delicious thing you have ever tasted, and it tastes nothing like the thing in the can, and it's, you will think that the thing in the can is like poisonous.
Some other thing.
I mean, Persians really bring pride to their food, and it's very, very, you know, it took her maybe 4 to 5 hours to make dolmeh with me.
Okay, stop right there and tell me, what is dolmeh?
Dolmeh is a stuffed grape leaf.
Stuffed grape leaves, okay.
Yeah, I thought you knew that. So the world is not so much of one world. I know what Kugel is.
Okay, fair enough.
Anyway, so dolmeh is this stuffed grape leaf. And it's the ones that you sell, they sell in the can, those have only rice in them. But mm-hmm. Persian dolmeh has actually ground beef inside of it. And it has all kinds of really delicious, sweet and tangy additions to it. And it takes a long time because my husband's grandmother used to actually have a vineyard in her backyard, and she used to go and pick up the leaves one by one to be able to wrap the grape leaves around the meat. And,
there you go.
We don't have a. Do you have a vineyard in your backyard?
Not yet, no.
Not yet. Me neither. So you can buy. You can do a lot of shortcuts when it comes down to that. You can get the grape leaves in cans in a jar, and you can actually get them with the stems already cut off. A lot of the ingredients that dolmeh calls for are already grounded. A lot of the things are already very easily available. Things are easier to wash nowadays. And it's just literally in a snap you have dolmeh. And, you know, another thing that I also try to bring to Earth, I say like Persians sometimes have Persian food in the clouds because it's, they think of it as like this impossibility. But I had to take it down to Earth and say, you know, you can do these. If I can make it, you can make it. He's making Persian rice and the crusty bottom of the pot, which is tadig, which is probably the most famous Persian dish out there. And in some ways, it's not so much about the timing for it because it takes 45 minutes to make the bottom crust of the pot. But, you know, chicken soup also takes 45 minutes to make.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, kugel takes 45 minutes to 1 hour to bake instead of an oven. So it's really not so much about the cooking time of it. It's just that to get it right, that's the situation where people get so flustered about. But again, I have a video on the website because I figured this is really going to be helpful to have something visual. I'm a very visual person. I wanted to have people see exactly what it is that you need to do to be able to make it.
Uh-huh. Do you have, you have instructionals on how to do Persian food on the online?
Online. I have a website called kosherpersianfood.com, and there are videos online that you can see me do the recipes because sometimes people are not used to necessarily making this kind of food. So even the book has you know, specific directions on how to make it. It doesn't mean that people will know exactly what I mean by putting a paper towel between the lid and the pot. You know what I mean? So basically it tells you, it goes through every recipe, and I even have troubleshooting videos for certain recipes that are particularly difficult, because I found that it was very, you know, I had a lot of questions. I had a lot of questions while I was learning how to cook Persian food, and those troubleshooting videos came out from my own personal questions that I had, and a lot of people find them hilarious, but they're really, really helpful. Like, uh-huh. What happens if you burn your tadig, and why did it happen, or what happens if your rice never got crunchy, or what happens, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm. I am right now at your website, which is kosherpersianfood.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm clicking on YouTube videos and nothing's happening. Whoops.
That's it. So I have a YouTube channel, and in my YouTube channel you can see a ton of videos on how to make certain foods.
Wow, that's really awesome.
I'm working on more videos for that, and I think people find it to be, you know, nowadays it's wonderful to look at a book. I actually love every single one of my cookbooks. I read them before bedtime. I read them while I'm cooking. I it's more than a cookbook, just like your wife. I feel like a cookbook today has to give more than just a recipe. It has to give a story. It has to give. It has to have a heart. And but I still believe that we are so used to media, and we're so used to, you know, our phones making little noises and faces and this and that and lights and media everywhere, that we have become extremely visual people. And I think the visuals are very, very important.
Indeed. I see. These look like they're professionally done, too, as a matter of fact.
Yes. I would have no other way.
Indeed. These are great videos. I'm just watching over here. I wish you out there could see it, but you can see it if you go to kosherpersianfood.com and click on the
videos. Yeah, if you have internet access, you can.
I have it in the studio, and there you are. You just, this is wonderful. Now, I asked a question. There was a book that came out about 2 or 3 years ago called Cooking from Aleppo. And it was put up by Pupa Dueck.
Aromas of Aleppo.
Yes, by Pupa Dueck. And I asked her, there was a recipe over there for a form of kibbeh which was made. It was kibbeh tater is what it was called. And it had raw ground beef in it. And I asked her, do her grandchildren, she's a grandmother, said, do your grandchildren eat this?
I know Pupa. I know her.
And she said, they wouldn't touch it because it's raw meat. And she said, she was born in Aleppo, and of course she was raised with this, but her grandkids wouldn't think about touching it. Your children, I can't hear you, have 5 kids, and their grandmother is the Persian one. Are there any Persian recipes that your kids are just too American to eat?
I'm pretty realistic with that. I would say more like I'm incredibly surprised that they eat any of this food at all. You know, seriously.
Want Cheerios and French fries. Yes, I understand.
Kids just have pasta with olive oil and salt and like chicken nuggets.
Right.
That's what we feed our children at school.
It's universal, right? We know.
Butter sandwich. You know, to be honest with you, I'm surprised, but my children adore Persian cuisine. Adore it. Like, they eat the craziest things. The hardest thing for me as an adult to even venture upon was having that green stew called horeshte sabzi, which is the green Persian stew, which is very, very common, and they have it in all Persian restaurants. And it was like, this is like the green eggs and ham to me. Like, this is gross. This green thing with dried, dehydrated, like, ugly black lines floating on top of it. I was disgusted by this thing. And then you try it, and you realize, oh, my gosh, this is better than, like, I don't know. It's just unbelievable. But when you look at it, it doesn't look so appetizing. So my children actually adore that stew so much. I don't understand how is it that they're eating so many vegetables in the stew. It's pure nature, that stew. Completely, incredibly nutritious. The limes are so rich in vitamin C. All the vegetables, and I'm just so happy that they like it. They love tadik. They love the rice. They love all of it. They really cannot get enough of Persian food.
Okay, terrific. Our guest is Raina Simnagar, who is the author of Persian Food from The Non-Persian Bride. Is published by Feldheim, available wherever fine Jewish books are sold. We got Passover coming up. I remember 1979, after the Ayatollah took over and kicked out the Shah, there was a major airlift of young Persian Jews to New York. And Rabbi Hecht, of blessed memory, was very much influential in getting them out. And the Rebbe was very much pushing to get as many people out of Iran as possible. And they were put up for several months in the Crown Heights section of Brooklyn, and it included Passover.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a big conflict between these Persians and the Hasidic homes which they were in, because they ate rice on Passover.
Right.
So how is it, if you could describe, what is it, what are people doing in, say, 21st century Great Neck, New York, as far as keeping with the Persian traditions and what people have come to expect living in a country which is primarily Ashkenazi Jewish when it comes to Jewish customs?
So fortunately, we're being able to keep these traditions for over since the time of Queen Esther. And Persians have eaten rice on Passover throughout the ages. And it feels just so bad. My Ashkenazi cousins are not keeping this tradition. No, it really feels bad because had you not made it to Europe, you also would be eating rice right now. You know, it's basically just the way that being harvested things in Iran, agriculture was just different than it was in Europe. And we're able to keep, you know, I adore eating rice over Passover, but there is always, with every privilege, there is an obligation. And the only problem with that is that you have to check the rice 3 times before you eat it over Passover. We're looking for barley. We're looking for chametz, and for all kinds of bugs and disgusting things. But you know, during the year you're supposed to check the rice one time. Over Passover, we're supposed to check it three times. I am not going to lie to you. I really am not looking forward to right now sitting and checking a 10-pound of rice, a 10-pound bag of rice to get it ready for Passover. But at the same time, it's very special because it comes to show you that we've had this Mesorah, this tradition throughout all these years, and we're still keeping it up. And there's not a single Persian household out there that is, you know, Persian enough to not have rice over Passover, definitely. Not just that, but the Persians also wet matzah, and they make it into, you know, rolls, and they wrap hot dogs around it, I mean, kebab around it, whatever, you know, they, the matzah is very, very big as well. And all the customs throughout the Seder are beautiful, beautiful customs, extremely animated. Nobody falls asleep at a Persian Seder. Nobody. Not just because the food is fabulous, but also because it's just so humorous and just they do really crazy things. And I just, I feel very proud that I can continue on this tradition. Absolutely.
Terrific. I see you have a recipe for Persian charosis, which, let me, for those who don't know, at the Seder, at the Passover Seder, some of the things, the matzah, the bitter herbs, are consumed with charosis. It's supposed to remind us of the mortar, which the Jews used in making brick. And in our house, it's very simple. We have some walnuts, which are ground up, and we have a little bit of apple, and we add a little bit of wine, and that's turns brown, and that becomes the charosis.
Right.
And it's very boring as far as I'm concerned. But I see here, you have here a, it's all kinds of things going well beyond that. Did your mother-in-law or anybody explain to you the significance of using all these ingredients in the charosis?
You know, just like probably your grandmother doesn't know the significance of putting necessarily all the ingredients in the charosis, I don't think my mother-in-law would have known what the significance is of putting each of these ingredients. Definitely, obviously, it's supposed to symbolize the mortar, but I don't think that she would even be able to. I don't even think at a Persian rabbi would be able to tell you why do we put a banana in the charoset or why do we.
Yeah, I was actually noticing that can't be very old because bananas were only brought to the Middle East from Africa 100 years ago or so.
That's what I was going to tell you next. The truth is, a charoset is very, very particular to not just each province in Iran, but even to each family. So this is my mother-in-law's charoset, which is called haleg in Farsi. But everybody's haleg in Iran is completely different. Some people would never put bananas. Like, what are bananas and charoset doing? Or some people would never even put apples. Some people just do it with date syrup and a few walnuts. It depends on the family. It depends on the people. My mother-in-law uses Kiddush wine. And I like using grape juice because I feed my children and I have to make it PG-13. Well, PG.
Okay.
So, PG-13. So it really all depends on each family. And I think that the only difference between the Persian charoset, the spices that we put in the Persian charoset is what makes it extremely beautiful and exotic. And for example, we put cardamom. Mm-hmm. In Persian charoset, and cardamom makes it very aromatic and very flavorful, and as well as cinnamon, which I think the Ashkenazi charoset, which I love. I actually love Ashkenazi food. I'm telling you, I love Ashkenazi charoset as well. It has also cinnamon, but also the Persian charoset has ginger as well. Again, it depends on the family, but most families use all that mixture of cardamom, ginger, and cinnamon in the charoset, and but for the most part, in terms of the ingredients, it depends on the family.
Okay, good. That's going to have to. We're running out of time quickly for this segment. Again, our guest has been Raina Simnagar, who is the author of Persian Food for the Non-Persian Bride, has holiday recipes for all the holidays and every feast you could possibly want to imagine, of possibly from before soup, from salad to dessert. And the website, you can check it out, is kosherpersianfood.com. It's published by Feldheim, available wherever fine Jewish books are sold. Thank you so much, Raina, for coming on. We should continue success. And have a happy and a healthy Passover.
You too.
Okay, take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Chiropractic healthcare offers patients the advantage of a safe and natural method of healing without the use of drugs or surgery. People of all ages, including children, benefit from chiropractic's unique approach to health. Call area code 248-557-1818 today to find out how chiropractic can benefit your family. At the Solomon Chiropractic Center, we especially love children. All kids should have their spines checked periodically throughout their crucial growing years. Growth on a crooked foundation will create a crooked spine and become harder to correct later in life. Kids love to get adjusted at the Solomon Chiropractic Center. And hey, moms, did you know that chiropractic offers a safe, drug-free approach to helping with the many pains women often get during and after pregnancy? We even have special tables which open up so pregnant women can lay on their stomachs. We treat moms, dads, children, and grandparents with arthritic pains, neck pains, back pain, and headaches. People of all ages, including kids, benefit from chiropractic. Come experience the natural method of healing without the use of drugs or surgery. Stop living in pain. Call area code 248-557-1818 today for a free consultation at the Solomon Chiropractic Center to discuss you and your family's health needs. Remember, 557-1818. That's 557-HI-HI.
Hey, Herschel Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. Listen, talking about food always makes me hungry. But as we said at the onset of the show, Mr. Benny Friedman, who is considered a rising Jewish star, is right now in Oak Park singing at the dedication of the Torah scroll at the Yeshiva Lubavitch on 10 Mile. If it starts at 12 o'clock, you can go over there. And so, just to let you know, if you don't know who Benny Friedman is, well, we've got his latest release. This is called Yesh Tikva, There's Always Hope. Let's listen to Benny Friedman.
והכל יסתדר כי השם יעזור. יש תקווה, נשיר כולנו יחד. יש אמונה חזקה מכל הפחד. לא ניפול, לא נירד, כי אנחנו לא לבד. יש לנו השם אחד. יש תקווה, נשיר כולנו יחד. יש אמונה חזקה מכל הפחד. לא ניפול. Shem Echad
assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Femin here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We got some time for some public service announcements, known as PSAs. It is No Dream, the life of Theodore Herzl, presented by the Detroit chapter of the Zionist Organization of America, Wednesday, February the 20th at 7:30 p.m. at the Holocaust Memorial Center. For contact information, for details, contact 661-6000. It's a movie. Looks pretty cool. And let's see what else we have. Read Detroit. Women's Department Tikkun Olam volunteers invite you to celebrate National Reading Month by sharing a book with a kindergartner at Bagley Elementary School in Detroit. Please bring one new book to read and donate to a student. Go to jewishdetroit.org/TOV, etc. And for questions, contact Megan at 248-203-1460 or Topper, T-O-P-P-R, at jfmd.org, Jewish Federation of Metro Metro Detroit.org. Your organization having a function that requires a little PR? Have no fear. The Jewish Hour is here. Send it off, too, and all that information, too. RabbiFinman.com, and we'll let you know about it right here on the radio. Of course, it's free of charge because that's what public service announcements are. We got time for a couple more songs. This is another new star coming up from Israel. His name is Itzik Dedia. The song he's singing is Baruch Hashem, which means thank God, and thank God sounds like a really good song. Let's listen.
Baruch Hashem al Moshe Yesh Lecha, Baruch Art Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Purim is coming up. It's next week. And is it next week? Yes, Purim is next week. Speaking of Purim, you're cordially invited to join the Finman family, Shalom Wayne, the radio, the Jewish Hour, and the likes, for a Purim Megillah reading. That's the Scroll of Esther, buffet dinner, and more. Costumes encouraged. Sunday, February 24th. At the historic Scarab Club, which is on the corner of Farnsworth and John R., right behind the DIA. Secure parking is on premises. $10 per person, $5 for kids, $5 for students. Kids are free. RSVP to rabbifinman.com. And again, it's a project of Shalom Wayne. So Purim's coming. So let's listen to the Maccabees doing the Purim song.
Sayings stand for a tale so grand. Shushan is the place where it all began. The hidden miracle. One man, second in command. Slay all the Jews with his wicked plan. A scheme so miserable. He chose the day for the disaster. It's ironic what came out. From behind the scenes, she wore the royal crown. 3 days the Jews just prayed. Queen Esther risked her life, went to save the day. She took Haman down. The streets were filled with celebration. Everyone ate Haman Tashin. Jubilation for the nation.
You have the wrong house.
Wait! I'm afraid that's important.
Come on in!
Hey! Hey!
So raise your glass if you see God. In hidden places, he's right in front of you. We will never be, never be anything more proud to tell our story in a humble home. Oh,
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. You know the best place to buy fruit and vegetables? Why, it's at Fruitasia. Located on Southfield Road, just south of the 13 Mile, Fruitasia provides quality, value, and the most wonderful environment to shop. You'll enjoy the spacious aisles, excellent selection, great prices, and friendly staff at Fruitasia on Southfield Road and 13 Mile. Why go anywhere else when you can go to One Stop Kosher? Located on Greenfield Road, just south of 696, you're never far from One Stop Kosher. At One Stop Kosher, you'll find the largest selection of Passover products in Michigan. One Stop Kosher carries thousands of kosher for Passover items, and over 100 Passover items are on sale now. They even have kosher for Passover pizza, hamburger buns, and cake. One Stop Kosher has the largest selection of kosher for Passover wines as well. It's One Stop Kosher on Greenfield Road in 696 for all your shopping needs. Are listening to the Jewish Hour. Just a reminder that Fruitasia now sells kosher meat and some kosher packaged goods, carryout type stuff. Ready to bake kugel, that kind of stuff. Ready to bake sweet and sour meatballs, chicken soup, all kinds of good things over there in their grocer's food case, as it used to be called. You're listening to the Jewish Hour, of course. This week is the portion of Tetzaveh. It is found in chapter 8 and following, 29 and following in the book of Exodus, and deals primarily with the clothes of the high priest that were worn in the temple. He had eight specific garments. One of them that we're going to focus on today was called the breastplate. It was a woven wool, I wouldn't call it an epaulette. It was like a square. It was like, you know, 4 hand breasts by 3 hand breasts. And in it were sewn in various stones of various colors, each one representing a tribe. And then each tribe was engraved with gold. The names of each stone had the names on it. And a very interesting thing would happen if there would be a battle between two tribes, some kind of argument, they would go to the high priest, and then the stone that was corresponding to whichever tribe would light up, indicating that that tribe was right. So if there was like a war between, or an argument between Judah and Benjamin, so they'd go and then it would light up Judah or Benjamin. Really cool. It was a form of prophecy, and it only worked in the first temple. It did not work in the second temple because they didn't know how to get it to work in the second temple. It kind of like went down with the ship when the first temple went down. But it was called not just a breastplate. It was called the Choshen Mishpat, the judgment plate, meaning it was able to discern between right and wrong. The Almighty has given us a Choshen Mishpat. It happens to be the 4 books of the Shulchan Aruch, the Code of Jewish Law. The Code of Jewish Law is patterned the same way. It's the predecessor to the Shulchan Aruch is called the Turei Zahav, which means these rows of stones. And its purpose is that we should be able to discern right from wrong. The Almighty wants to have a relationship with us. And it's been often said that if you really, 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 really want to find God, the place to look is in the Code of Jewish Law. We've got to take a quick commercial break and be right back with the Hasidic story. Don't go away. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. Or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for the Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? The way to do that, rabbifinman.com. If your organization's having a function and want to have it publicized, rabbifinman.com. Got a question, anything about Judaism? rabbifinman.com. Want to just vent your spleen about something? rabbifinman.com. It's all there. You'll also find archived editions of the show, classes that we teach that get posted online, and, of course, the all-important donation page. We need your help. The Jewish Hour is sponsored in part by our sponsors, but it's such now that it's been many years now. The show is primarily sponsored by listeners like you. So go to rabbifinman.com, click on the donations page, give a donation. You can also reserve for the Purim party, which is going to be next Sunday at 12:30 at the Scarab Club in historic section of Detroit, downtown behind the DIA. It's going to be a happening, folks. Let me tell you, go to Rabbi Finman and reserve a place. We only have room for a certain amount. We're going to be turning people away pretty soon, I'm sure. So go reserve your place now. And the give a donation of each charge. Want to donate something via regular mail? You're more comfortable that way? That's fine. Send your donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. About 250 years ago, Reb Shlomo of Karlin was passing through a town, and he stayed at the home of one Yehuda Pastrova. And this Yehuda Pastrova wasn't really into the Hasidic philosophy business. He thought the whole thing was a bunch of who knows what. So the Shlomo Karlin woke up in the morning and said, I want to go to the mikvah. I want to immerse myself in a pool of living water. So he said, there's no mikvah around here. He said, well, how about a river? He said, nope, no river. He said, how about a spring? He said, well, there's a spring in the backyard of the local priest, but I'm warning you, he's a real vehement, rabid anti-Semite. He said, fine, I'm going to go. And he took some sheets with him. And people saw this rabbi, and he said, where are you going? He said, I'm going to go immerse myself in this spring in the rabbi's house, and in the priest's, behind the priest's house. And it was like a small throng, and they came, and they were holding up the sheets so he'd have like some privacy, and he went, and he immersed himself, and he left. The priest came out and said, what's going on over here? And he said, there was this rabbi, and he came to town, and he just immersed in your spring. And he said, he did what? He said, tell him to come here right away. So they went and they told him that the priest would like to see him. And he said, I'm not going to go see him. And the priest was like he was just like ready to pop a gasket. And so he said, that's insolence. And he ran, he stormed into the room where Shlomo Karlin was praying. And he became so awestruck that he turned around and left. Afterwards, this Yehuda Pastrova asked this rabbi, Shlomo Karlin, how is it that this person who is not even Jewish recognizes that you're such a holy person and me, I don't? Very interesting answer he answered him. He said, you're not supposed to be a follower of mine. You're supposed to go to Lyuzhna and become a follower of the Lyuzhna Magid, who is known as the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. And so since your soul doesn't have a connection to mine, you didn't think I was anything special. But indeed, Shlomo Carlin was indeed something special. That's going to do it for the show. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We're getting ready for Purim. Thursday is the fast of Esther from sunrise to sunset. People give half a dollar to charity. And you can still go to RabbiFinman.com and pay the $10 for the meal next week at the Scarab Club. And until then, have a good week.